Tuesday, February 12th, 2019, 9 a.m. is hereby called to order. I would like to welcome everyone here today. Councilor Brian Frelick sends his regrets for today's meeting. I would ask that anyone who has an electronic device, please switch it to the silent mode, if you would. And I would also like to advise you that our accessible washroom revisions have been completed, and the washroom just outside of council chamber is now back in service. Are there any changes or amendments to the agenda as circulated? I have none to present this morning. Hearing none, a motion to approve the agenda circulated would be in order. Moved by Councilor McLeod, seconded by Deputy Mayor Kelly. Any discussion? Ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. That brings us to 3.0 presentations. And under 3.1 this morning, we have Corporal John Harris, who is acting detachment commander. And I would ask Constable Harris to come forward, please.
Morning.
I guess I can quickly go through the report and then make myself available for questions if that serves everyone. So I guess first page we've got personnel. So we've had some update on that. Staff Sergeant Archibald will be on the ground ready to work on the 1st of April, which will be a great help to us all. We're currently in staffing actions. We're working on having the second corporal position filled and one of the constable positions that have been occupied but vacant for a while. So we're in a position now where those are actively being worked on by staffing. So that's
all.
Awesome.
Speak up a little bit. They can't hear you over there.
Oh, I apologize. Two of the positions that had been semi-vacant for a while, we're in staffing actions now. So we're looking at trying to get another corporal and one of the constable positions filled, and the staff sergeant will be on the ground April 1st. Information of interest, I'm sure most people probably heard about it, but we did have an unfortunate missing persons complaint on the 21st of January where a 49-year-old male went for a ATV drive on Ponhook Lake. Unfortunately, after we did searching with the RCMP helicopter and our underwater recovery team, we did find the male, and he was deceased. So that was an unfortunate one, but it was really good work by our members and coordination of available resources by Constable Duffney, who was our he was the incident commander for that. So as I mentioned, we got staffing actions coming up, so we'll have some extra boots on the ground here fairly soon. In the community policing side, Constable Duffney has been pretty busy. December, not so much with the schools being closed for Christmas break and everything, but he was able to do, he's been doing a lot of presentations lately about marijuana legislation, the effects of marijuana. Some anti-drug presentations were done Liverpool High School, the grade 10s. He's been doing a little bit of school bus enforcement, but we've been pulled away for a few high-risk files, so it's been tough to keep that up. January, Constable Duffney was doing presentations about theft and consequences of theft. He took part in the family literacy program and spoke to kids at North Queens Community School. Two presentations at North Queens Community School regarding bullying and cyberbullying, something that our detachment is really focusing on now in the community policing side. And he actually had National Youth Services from Ottawa attend Liverpool to present to Liverpool Regional High School students and the grade 9 students at North Queens School about the new cannabis legislation and the effects of cannabis use. The senior safety side, that's the monthly stats and information. You'll see that the page is the same information that we presented before, just the various senior safety roles, I suppose. And I know last meeting when I was here, there was some question about the statistics that I brought. the number of active clients this month, the number of active clients receiving services. I got some clarification on that. So I've put in there in brackets that there are, in the month of December, senior safety was actively interacting with 12 seniors, and there are 20 that are kind of in the program right now receiving services that have been referred. December, there was one new referral for senior safety, 9 home visits, 1 file that was closed, and there's some hours and some mileage there as well. So, senior safety, December 3rd, attended chronic pain support group planning, and watched seniors' mental health education teleconference, pharmacological management of neuropsychiatric symptoms of dementia. I've changed up the way that the stats are presented. There used to be just a graph just showing a whole bunch of numbers. This one here will give a little bit better idea of what we're up to and sort of what types of occurrences that we're taking on. One thing I will say just about the way these stats, the new stats are presented, is don't take the clearance rates as sort of gospel. These are all new files, so a lot of them are still under investigation. So the rates aren't as accurate as they would be if I was to run last year's stats where all the files have been concluded. Are there any questions about the statistics that are in the package?
Councilor Fancy?
As a whole, I got just a couple of questions.
Sure.
One was that portable speed side, are we going, is there any set time that it's going to be brought here that we could be able to use?
Yes. So the plan is to bring that down. The problem that we're having is currently we don't have a vehicle that can tow it. The RCMP has an interesting rule where if you have a pursuit rated vehicle, you can't have a tow bar on it. So currently all of our vehicles are pursuit rated, so we can't do that. I'm working on trying to get the tow bar put onto the, we have an administrative van sort of thing. Okay. So we're working to try and get that set up to bring it down. It's probably the silliest rule that we have, but it is one that we have to abide by. So there are plans to bring that down, because it is a useful tool. That we're also, you know, because it is a great speed deterrent, but we're also planning some handheld laser enforcement. Good. It's a little bit more effective in town where, you know, police crews are trying to turn around and do enforcement in town just isn't as effective. So that's, those are two things that we are planning on doing, yeah.
Can I continue on?
Yes.
Along with that one subject is that last time they brought it, we just in and did a few areas and quickly taken out. So.
Yep.
You know, just didn't, it really didn't hit the spots we needed to hit.
Yep.
So it'd be nice if we could be able to talk when it's here, if it's going to be here, maybe leave it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, whatever it may be to work with it.
Yeah, I can certainly try and organize that. Okay. The thing with the speed trailers is they're a shared resource between.
But the other time it was all down Bridgewater, so we never got it again, so.
Nope, understood.
We got to that short time. The other thing, I don't know if we can talk about the rash of breaking injuries that we've been having lately.
Yeah, I can speak very, very briefly about it because it is an active investigation, but a suspect has been identified and we're working on that currently.
Okay.
Yeah.
You would?
Sorry?
Are you going to speak on it?
Oh, that's about all I can say about it right now. Yeah, but I said very, very briefly.
I just wanted to make sure that was
No, yes. That's something that is being investigated and right in the middle of it right now.
That's
so.
Great.
So, Councillor Fancy, did you have another follow-up?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Councillor McLeod?
Good morning again.
Good morning.
And I understand that Staff Sergeant Archibald has bought property in Queens County.
That is correct.
Yeah. Yeah, which is good, and has a family as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that really is a benefit to us.
Mm-hmm.
Not only as a position, but as in the community benefits. I have a question regarding your members, and some of them are called back to duty. Some are off on stress leave and other mm-hmm. types of leave. So how many are returning here that have been off?
None.
None?
Not right this moment, no.
Okay, so how many do we still have?
Currently, we're kind of in, we're in a transition with two positions. There's one that will still be on long-term leave, and one that is currently still on administrative leave. But the other two positions we're looking, because we were four, and we're looking to fill two of those positions currently.
Okay.
We're in the staffing process for two of them.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And I also have a question about the bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that your community policing officer deals with that at the school level. But I'm really concerned, and I had students that lived with me from other countries. They attended high school, and also I have relations with kids that are going to the high school. Mm-hmm. And apparently there is a lot of bullying going on, but it's not addressed by staff. So is a relation between, like, who deals with that, and how is that dealt with at the school level, do you know?
No. Will anything that's reported to us is either dealt with the members that are on shift, or a lot of times it'll be dealt with the members on shift and then refer to Constable Duffney, who does a lot of follow-up in the schools and does the presentations. But I know that in, I don't have exact numbers, but in quite a few cases, Constable Duffney has done one-on-ones a lot of time with some of those issues, trying to help the staff and help the students. But I know that
he
has been.
One-on-one with the student that is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tricky situation because, you know, it's obviously a horrible thing, but oftentimes it doesn't cross into the criminal side of things. So
no.
We're trying to find a way, and luckily Constable Duffney has a good relationship with a lot of the schools, it seems, and he's able to meet with staff and meet with students fairly regularly.
It crosses over into the mental health issues, and that really is not being addressed. And I don't have that.
Yeah. It's tricky. Mental health issues, I mean, we have those in just about every aspect of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, you know, I mean, as we all know, there's limited services for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably an area that probably could use some attention, but that would be outside of our level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Deputy Mayor Kelly?
Yes, I wanted to ask you, is there any... with the rash of break-ins, I know you can't say a lot, but we've also had I know that there's been a couple of businesses broken into, but there's also been, over the last month or more, a rash of break-ins in people's cars.
Yes.
Is that connected to that?
I don't believe that it is.
Pardon?
I don't believe that it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I've been encouraging people, like, I see them on Facebook, oh, watch out, lock your cars at night, and they say, have you reported it to the police? No, that's a good idea. It's like, well, if you don't report it, even though nothing's being taken, like, unless you're leaving money or valuables in the car, you're just rifling through and looking for valuables and then leaving it. So if it's been rifled through, so I can pinpoint everywhere across, like, South Queens where it's been happening.
Yeah.
But unless you know, you're not building a file.
No, and that's right. And like one of the resources that we have is a crime analyst.
Right.
And you know, we encourage anybody that we are hearing about to report them. And when someone who's reporting and says, oh, well, my neighbor and my neighbor's neighbor, their cars were also rifled through, we're encouraging those people to report as well.
Yes.
Because it does help us. If we see that there's, you know, a rash of them, we can send that information to the crime analyst and they can do predictive patterns.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're speaking to people, please encourage them
to
report.
Encourage everybody
to
call, no matter what. Just call and let them know, like, the regular detachment number to tell them that what has happened. You know, people think, well, they're not going to do anything. They can't do anything. It doesn't matter. They need to know. I know.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know.
No, the more information that we have, I mean, the better.
Exactly.
You know, and probably, and a lot of problem that we'll have is if there are crimes that we're not hearing about, then we might not see a trend that maybe the community's talking about, and we're kind of caught off guard saying, well, we can't help you if we don't know.
Exactly.
So, we try to encourage people to report everything, and for whatever reason people feel that, well, it might be a bother or nothing can be done, well, that's not necessarily true.
Exactly.
So.
I was wondering, and I don't know if it's possible or not, but I was wondering, I'd like to see any trends for the senior safety coordinator. With just the box, we know that there's, 12 interactions, 20 clients receiving service. I don't quite understand some of these numbers, but if we could see, like, month on month, like, or every time you come back for a report to compare the before and after, just to see if it's up and down or if it's getting worse or whatever. So it'd be nice to see because we do have an issue with senior safety officers or coordinators, whereas we don't think there's enough of them or enough hours or what commitment to the community. It would be nice to have that data to back up, just how much we need to look at the trends. If
that's not a problem at all.
Thank you.
Any other counselor have a question or comment? Well, seeing none, thank you, Constable John Harris. Appreciate your report this morning and answering some questions.
Sure. You're welcome, sir.
We look forward to a future presentation.
Very good. Well, I'd imagine next time it may or may not be the staff sergeant, so.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Under item 3.2, we have a presentation this morning on Eventide by Brittany Wenzel and Stacey Smart Chandler, and I would ask them to please come forward.
So good morning, thank you for having us here this morning. I just want to start off with a quick introduction of who we are. I'm Stacey Smart Chandler, I'm a graduate of Mass Penn University with a interdisciplinary Bachelor of Fine Arts degree. I have a background in picture framing and gallery management, and volunteered for lots of groups and things in the region.
I'm Brittany Wenzel, and I'm a graduate of the NSCC Photography Program. I am Vice Chair of Eventide and Vice President of the Wind of Change, so a little bit of arts background for me too.
I'll just say what Eventide is. Eventide is Liverpool's first Art at Night Festival, and it'll be taking place on May 11th from 7 p.m. till 12 in the morning.
And our vision is to, see Queens County, which we already know is a haven for artists. We want to see that shown off as much as possible. Much like other art festivals, we want to see art displayed in as many windows as possible and have as many events going on at the same time as we can possibly gather. We envision Main Street being lit up and alive at a time of day it normally isn't, and full of artists in all of the venues. Maybe you'll hear poetry and, at the same time as looking at locally made art, maybe you'll see fire dancers while listening to local musicians. These are all within the realms of possibility.
Okay, one of the reasons that we feel this is an important festival for Queens County is that we have so many creative individuals in the region, as well as businesses and public spaces that are devoted to arts and culture. But we have no event that is dedicated specifically to the arts. So this will fill the void and allow for greater exposure and promotion of our artists, musicians, writers, and performers. It will also grant access to their work and ideas by the general public. It will foster an environment of creative thinking, problem solving, ingenuity, and cooperation. It will also create an opportunity for local businesses and groups to either host a participant, advertise in our program, or sponsor a specific event. This will create more foot traffic and possibly more awareness of their brand or business.
So why are we here right now? Well, we need a couple of things from council to make this happen. First and foremost, we are looking for your general support. We know that you have the ears of your constituents, and if you help us spread the word to artists, what we're doing and what we're planning, that would be a great help. The region of Queens also does an excellent job of promoting things through Facebook. Hello, Heather Cook. She does a really wonderful job on social media, and if we could be a part of some of that, that would also be a really great help. We were also hoping that, some of the signage and stuff that the region of Queens utilizes, we could also be a part of. I know that sometimes there are boards put up that are, what's happening in Queens, that kind of thing, and if we could be a part of that as well, that that would be very helpful. We are also looking to use the Town Hall Arts and Cultural Center as our home base. We have actually already spoken to Andrew Bursey and John Patterson, who have thrown their full support behind us and are willing to help us make that happen. But we also wanted to use the gallery space. We have a lot of young, and when I say young, I mean little people too, who are artists in town, and we want to display their work too, but the safest and most central place for them and easiest place for them and their parents to be is the Town Hall. So we think that if we filled the Town Hall with youth art, that would be a really great feature and an easy way for them to be there and talk about their work with their parents and things like that. So just a safe place for them to be located. Logistically, we have considered the idea of shutting down a part of Main Street if the weather is fine and there are people who would like to be on the street or perform. That is not uncommon in some of these types of festivals. We've seen that in places, you know, like with Nocturne and stuff, certain areas that are kind of cordoned off so that people can get creative. But we're still waiting to see what our artists want or need. So we're not sure on that, but that's one thing we might end up needing to speak to you about. And lastly, we've also applied for a grant through the new grants program. We're unsure of whether or not it should have been in the events section, but Dana Henley, who was incredibly helpful, assured us that if you needed to switch, you could. So we're just hoping for your consideration in that application as well. So thank you for your time and for listening to us speak today. And we look forward to seeing everyone May 11th.
Any council's comments or questions? Deputy Mayor Kelly?
Eventide. Why Eventide? I'm curious. How did you name it?
I was looking for something that conveyed this is a nighttime art festival, something to do with the ocean, something like that. And this word seemed to pop out to me.
Okay, nice. I really like what you're doing, and hopefully it'll be something that we can start off with an annual event.
Definitely.
But it's just, right now, it's just one night.
Yes,
yeah.
And there is the potential, I've seen in other areas that they've had like an extra evening, say the Friday before, to kick off the event,
yeah.
Like a showcase.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it seems, you know, like just like for all the work and stuff like that, you just, and it's and it sounds like such a wonderful event, and to highlight the art, because it's just amazing, and we just don't do enough to sort of highlight it all together. We have all these pockets of it, but just to put an umbrella over it and shine a light on it all, it'd be lovely to see it for a longer period of time, especially if there's installations and things, art installations and things like that for people to view over a longer period of time. But I think it's wonderful what you're doing. Yes, we'll help any way I can help you, I will. You already know that this week. Yeah.
Councilor McLeod?
I think it's wonderful. Thank you so much for putting your creative minds together and coming up with an idea. And I can just vision bright lights, and, you know, and glitter and celebrating our art in all of its forms. And I like the idea too that you've added sort of the nautical or the water ocean, because we have an inner harbor which is never utilized for anything. And this is an opportunity for, like, the Canoe and Camera Club and those places to come up with a kind of display and art, you know, what, I don't know, your mind just goes nuts with this sort of thing. So, you know, if you ever need any help, you just contact me and I'd love to get involved.
Councilor Benson?
I think what you're doing, it's a few things, especially on council's end, is that we have an open area that needs to be used. So you're first off bringing forth something that's being creative, and it's not something driven by council, it's driven by others, and which is a good way of doing things, and you guys are showing forth that. But may I ask why is it, that's, when I look on the calendar, that's Monday night, right? It isn't the 11th.
Saturday.
Saturday. I thought you said the 11th, didn't you?
The 11th.
Oh. I got the wrong
month.
I thought you said
Saturday.
I thought you said March.
That
I didn't think you said May. Okay, so that solves that.
Saturday, May 11th.
Okay, so this is going to go on. You're going to go on in the evening and go through the night with it.
Yep.
So then people can be able to wander through and be able to see these things.
And we've already got a lot of venues that have kind of bought into the idea of doing kind of collaborative things. Hell Bay is very willing to have musicians and artists. And things like that combined. We are going to be talking to another venue about hosting a coffee house with poets. So different things, different activities that you can take in throughout the night that are all within the walkable area.
And I think it's also too, which you probably felt, you fellows are probably already looking into. I remember when my son was in school, the talent up at the school is just incredible. A lot of times they don't do anything else with it.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll be at the prom or something, you'll see them do things on the murals on the wall and things, but it kind of goes there, comes there and goes there, and then nothing else develops with it. So the school never gets out there, especially senior highs and things, who become more, you know, a little more shy. When you're younger, you do it, but when you're older, you don't do it.
Any other counselor have a question or comment? Counselor Fisk?
I just think this is fantastic for Queens. I one thing, you've got a great idea. I do know there's lots of talent in the region of Queens, throughout the whole county and through the town and area. And I'm certainly going to light up the Main Street, and I look very forward to coming to celebrate that event. Thank you very much for your coordinate for that.
I have one more comment, and then I'd like to hand something out. One final comment that I just wanted to quickly address was with one of the questions we had. So we presented to Awesome, which is a group that
yes.
You guys know Awesome. Okay. So we didn't win our Awesome Foundation presentation, but they want us to come back. But one of the questions they asked us was about Afterglow in Bridgewater. So I wanted to address that before we leave, because Afterglow was Bridgewater's version of something like this, and it is it's probably done now. They didn't have a lot of community buy-in, and they really struggled. One of the things that I told them, though, and this is why we're very confident that we can pull this off here, is that Liverpool has a lot of things that are a little different than Bridgewater. So Bridgewater's downtown core doesn't have galleries. It doesn't have a lot of, you know, walkable places. It doesn't have the Town Hall Arts and Cultural Center, which is really the centerpiece of this. So I really do think that given the community that we have here as far as arts is concerned, I think that we have the ability to pull it off and get the community buy-in. I mean, just look at the LITF fish. Like, everyone kind of gets on board.
And
so the curling stones. Like, you know, so everybody kind of gets on board with things like this. And we're really hoping that people have confidence in us and get on board with us as well. And before we go, we're just going to give you a letter that we have drafted. It is for businesses and venues, so we want to show you what we're going to be asking of the groups here, or of the businesses here. And it gives people different options to, you know, you can use their spot as a venue, they could advertise with us, and they can be a venue in different capacities. Maybe they just want to have something in their window. Maybe they'd like to have an artist there all night chatting, you know? Maybe they want some musicians.
You guys know the rules of the Awesome. You can go back 5 times. Keep going back.
They told us 4, but yes.
Oh, really? Oh.
four more.
One for Brian Brittany, community, one for Brian.
Oh, sorry.
Is this just an evening event, or is it going to run through the afternoon as well?
We have it set to start around 7 o'clock. There are some artists and events that will probably run outside of our scheduled time as well, depending on their needs for their project or idea.
Has anyone been to Nocturne in Halifax? It's a one-night thing, and it's like this, but it's, you know, it's city-wide.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually runs till about 1 a.m. It starts around 6 or 7.
Are there any further questions or counselors?
Yeah, just a comment. The worst thing about this event is that you'd never be able to take everything in. You're going to have to pick and choose. It's going to be hard to pick and choose what you want to see.
That would be a great situation
yeah.
if we could have
that. Well, thank you, Brittany and Stacey, for the impressive presentation. We look forward.
Thank
Moving on to 4.0, tabling of petitions. We have no petitions to table today. Are there any petitions to table today? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions today. We are now at 5.0 public question comment session, and I would ask that any member of the gallery that would like to speak, please state your name, your address, and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Leon Robinson, College Street, from Liverpool. First of all, I want to comment under 9.2. I see you looking at making recommendations for today with respect to night meetings and spreading them around the county. I think this is a good idea. Also, I noticed that the number starting at suggested starting at 7 p.m. instead of 6:30. That's a good idea. Under 13.1, the use of power situation here. I believe I live on College Street, and probably the commissioners from that could run over that part as a crow flies. It's not that distance. And I would think there'd be a lot of other areas that are unpopulated where that power could be located. That's all comment on that. And under 14.1, under the option clause there, with respect to Kelly Cove Salmon Limited, the letter that we has been proposed by your CAO, with questions and so on to the company there, I think that's very appropriate, and perhaps maybe we'll have more information so we can make a proper decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Liam. Any other member of the gallery?
Bill Cox, 129 Bob Road, West Point. I also would like to comment on those two items that Mr. Robinson referred to. I think it's a good idea to have these meetings moving around. This used to be the case, and we've had good attendance in bygone days, whether that appeal is still there at this time or not, but at least it does bring council to the communities, and gives the people who can attend the morning meetings an opportunity to address council. And I hope that your recommendation will be approved. In regard to 13.1, which is the tower, reading through the material and when intended for one of the public sessions, I would ask council to very carefully consider the decision in regard to this item. Reviewing it, I was not aware that this tower is so close to the development of Couch Ridge, and there is a limited potential there. That land has stayed vacant for some period of time and is now a drawing card for development, and as such, there is a large area of land there that is has a potential for development. So I would suggest, since there's lots of vacant land in the immediate area of Liverpool, that the alternate site be considered for that development, and the council reject the request from Eastman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Any other member of the gallery?
Hi there. I'm Lori Wyatt. I live at 1429 Flatiron Road in the village. I'm here today to talk or say my piece about the Orphan Pen Fish Frying. It's such a massive and highly sensitive topic with so many issues. Many valid points have already been made, so I don't feel the need to regurgitate all those details from the last meeting, other than to say that I walked away from here that night feeling really optimistic, because it felt to me that the council was in agreement with some of our concerns. I was further encouraged as you demonstrated an open mind when you commented on the old Goldwater site as a potential location for a closed pen fish farm, so thank you for that. On January 17th, I sent an interview a link to a documentary by a well-known biologist from D.C. named Alex Martin. I think everybody's familiar with this name. I hope that in the time since, you have all watched this one-hour documentary and contemplated the serious and disturbing information therein. For those that have not, it defines salmon as a keystone species that is essential to the functioning of the ecosystem as a whole, the biological foundation that supports the entire interdependent network of also describes three main diseases spread by open pen salmon farming. First, infectious salmon anemia, ISA, which is also known as the salmon flu. ISA is so serious that it is an international reportable disease, and it's being compared to smallpox and bubonic plague. Second, salmon alpha virus, which causes pancreas disease. This virus, if identified, requires that the entire farm population be killed off in the same way as mad cow disease. And third, the piscine reovirus, which affects 80% of all open pen farmed Atlantic salmon. It is linked to a host of health problems for fish, including heart disease and skeletal muscle inflammation, which causes heart attacks. Hemorrhaging of the internal organs. It's highly contagious, and since 2011, it has been detected in wild cutthroat and steelhead trout, as well as wild chinook, sockeye, coho, and chum salmons. It is believed to be the biggest cause of pre-spawn mortality. This is an extremely informative documentary that contains information from the Cohen Commission ISA hearings with statements from the two top world specialists from both World Reference Labs and the head of molecular genetics for DFO. As I watched this film, I was horrified by the graphic images and appalled to learn that diseased salmon have been found and tested positive in grocery stores and in restaurants. One has to wonder what effects ingesting these viruses can have on people over time. I can't stress enough how important it is that we educate ourselves to the dangers. Please review this film if you haven't already. I don't know how much confidence I can place in a federal government that tries so hard to repress critical information from the public, such as when the Agriculture Minister Don McCrae introduced Bill 37, titled the Animal Health Act, which, if passed, would make it a criminal offense to report information regarding farmed animal diseases to the public. I'm further disturbed by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which refuses to acknowledge a problem in the first place. So now's a probably a good time to say a few words about the precautionary principle. The precautionary principle provides that there is a social responsibility to prevent harm when it is within our power to do so, even when all the evidence is not in. It takes into account our social responsibility to protect and steward our environment, and it has been codified in Canada's Oceans Act and several international treaties that we are already signed on to. I strongly urge you to investigate the dangerous parasites and pathogens that open pen farms cannot capture or control. The damage to aquatic life from the infected blood water alone is alarming. Blood water is the wastewater that's released directly into the ocean untreated. One has to ask why anyone would invite that into our open clean waters. As for jobs, whenever I hear people in support of this expansion, it's usually because of the jobs. I don't really care about that, because that's so far removed from the point, from my perspective. We can provide jobs from closed pen farming as well. So why would you take that risk? In closing, I think I speak for many when I say we understand that as the global market now relies on farms for more than half of the fish used for human consumption, that it's the way of the future. So if we're going to continue farming fish, let us do it safely on land and in closed pens. Zero risk. Zero. I just want to leave you with a quote from the Democratic State Senator Kevin Ranker. In regards to the Washington State ban on open pen farming, he said, and I couldn't agree more, the economic, cultural, and recreational resources of these incredible waters will no longer be jeopardized by the negligent actions of this industry. The aquaculture industry must transition to land, and if it does, here in Queens County, wow, there would be some jobs in there. Anyways, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lori. I should advise that contact information for staff at Nova Scotia Lands was provided to any individual that had an interest to pursue land-based aquaculture on lands belonging to Nova Scotia Lands. So that will, of course, determine itself as time moves on.
Thank you.
Any other member of the gallery would like to speak?
Anna Mollis, 1901 House Road, this council and their address is your 14.1 issue today of a letter regarding that is being recommended to council for fish farming concerns. And I'm not speaking for myself personally today, but I'm speaking for a protective Lake community group who I come to read a letter from. So we're hoping that this will provide some clarity as to why our union ought to have our name on that letter. Okay? As always, we thank you as well for opportunity to address you and recognize the hard work that went into the contemplation of this letter. We thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and as I explained, I'm here to represent Protect the Cool Bay Community Group. We are a group of over 100 local citizens and business owners concerned about the economic prosperity, social well-being, and environmental sustainability of our coastal resources in Liverpool Bay and surrounding communities. While we appreciate that the region has given Protect Liverpool Bay the opportunity to review the letter drafted to Kelly Cove Salmon Limited and to make this a joint submission, our position is that we cannot sign this letter because our mandate is no expansion, no new marine fish farms in Liverpool Bay, and even larger in Nova Scotia. While we applaud the region taking a position in requesting information from Calico Salmon Limited, we are disturbed and saddened by the fact that the region is not supporting our position that finfish aquaculture has no place in the marine environment. If Kelly Cove Salmon Limited are able to provide details on the 24 points laid out in the letter, are you then okay with a project going forward? There are excellent examples of land-based fish farms in this province. The fish produced in these land-based fish farms are pesticide, antibiotic, and disease-free, even organically certified. These local companies manage all their own wastes in a closed system without contaminating our local environment. By continuing to support marine-based finfish aquaculture, we allow multinational corporations to damage our local environment. Our local industries, like tourism, could be impacted, as well as the lobster fishery. And all of this with very little economic benefit in return. We again, as a group, ask that you not stand by in fear that a united position against marine fish aquaculture in Liverpool Bay will affect future funding opportunities at the provincial government level. We are here today to stand up for our local communities, our industries, and our environment. And we look forward to hearing from each of our councillors here today on issue 14.1. Thank you.
Thank you. And it should be mentioned today that the final decision on any expansion or other issues regarding an application, should Kelly Cove Salmon decide to apply, will be made by the review board. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today?
home ownership anywhere in Nova Scotia. I think that's something that we should be damn proud of. Everybody's is to own their own home, and we've made it happen for more people than anywhere else in the province. Also, along with that, the report shows that we have the lowest rents and the lowest mortgages in the province. So I hope that that maybe will be looked at in terms of housing needs for the future, and the fact that maybe we don't need lower priced housing, maybe we need higher incomes. Secondly, like I said, I think that that should be something that should maybe be used as a promotional thing, because anybody looking to come here, they say, well, geez, anybody there can be a homeowner. Never thought I could, but hey, I think I can. Maybe this is the place for me. So possibly something to put as a promotional thing. Secondly, I would like to say congratulations to everybody involved in the Ripple Effect. I think that it's a great program. I'm glad that it's been implemented. I think that volunteers in this area are currently in crisis in Queens, and that I hope that the council will take it upon themselves or do something, I'm not sure exactly what at this point, to try to address volunteerism in this community and see if we can have some programs to increase that so that there will be more volunteers, because I think that we really need it. And I think that it's an issue that's coming up more and more now in politics. I think that it's not just us, but I think that the country as a whole sees that it is an area that needs to be addressed. So I hope that we take the stand on that and do something. And I'm willing to do something if anybody wants to come. Third, recently went to a fantastic community event. It was a very grassroots event. It was very well attended. I was at the Brooklyn Community Center last Friday night. I'd like to thank Susan and all of the people involved in that. Just to show exactly what can be done when you put your heart behind something. Well over 100 people there. Everybody enjoyed themselves. It was $2 to get in. 3-hour concert, and they fed you in the middle of it. Hell, who the hell wouldn't want to come? I think that we should put it on the agenda and have some of these things during Privateer Day, because I went there with a neighbor from out west who had moved here recently and had never experienced a kitchen party or a music jam. She said, I always heard of them, never ever experienced them, can't wait to get home, email people out west and tell them I finally went to one. They've been going on about it so long. It is a great thing, and I'd like to go to some more of them. So I'm hopefully planning to do one at another venue with some help from Susan, who's got all the good contacts. So thanks again. Last really great thing is I went to another public meeting at the Astor Theater regarding a whale sanctuary that they possibly want to put in this area. Well, I was blown away. Okay, so these people want to come. They are asking us if we would like to share some of our world-class clean green resources with them. Okay, as I stated the last time I was here, we're no longer in a desperation situation. We have resources that everybody in the world is going to want to take advantage of if we keep the clean and green. This is where our future could possibly be. These people want to come here. They want no money from us. They're not looking for government handouts. They're looking to come here. They're looking to bring large amounts of varying jobs from varying skill levels, bottom to top. They want to bring research venues. They want to bring educational institutions. Who wouldn't want to come here to see whales? It would be crazy of us not to actually try to enamor these people to come here and take some area. I'm not even suggesting Liverpool Bay. It doesn't really matter where it is. We'll all benefit from it. There's absolutely no way that we couldn't benefit from it. It is the wave of tomorrow. And I hope that for once, Queens County and Nova Scotia in general will get on the bus when it starts instead of getting on the bus at the end. Okay, because all the time, for years of this, I've watched as soon as the trend comes, everybody else gets on board, or somebody else starts a trend and whatnot. Oh, the trend's over? Well, now Nova Scotia wants to get on board. Isn't that great? That seems to be what's happening with agriculture, but I'll get to that later. So again, I would like to see that the council does something in order to try to tell these people that we would really love to have them here in our backyard. I know that people have emailed them and offered them places to stay, meals. Seems like a lot of people are very interested in it. And I think that we could have something, maybe a contest, name Beluga Bay. I don't know, right? But let's put our heads together and see what we could possibly do to get these people to come here before it's too late and they go somewhere else and spend all their money. Now, for the not-so-positive comments. to, but I'm kind of behind the times. I read the minutes from council from January 8, 2019, the last time I spoke here. And when I read the minutes as to what I said, I couldn't understand which side I was on anymore. The comments were so different from what I had actually stated here. Again, I was unsure which side I was on when I read the comments. So I don't want to be mean to anybody, but again, there's a communication problem here, obviously. Okay, because the points that I made while I was here, none of those, if I was from away here and I wanted to get caught up on what had happened at the council meeting, my points would not have been shown there. Nobody would have understood what I was saying. So, I would like to reiterate, because it appears that there was some kind of a problem with what I said, and maybe it was me not being clear enough about my issues. So the first issue that I made was the fact that I thought that everything should be based on good, independent, scientific data. I reiterate, independent. That means independent of aquaculture and provincial industries, people who are lobbying for money, and that's why they're telling you the things they're telling you. We sat again at the Whale Sanctuary and we listened to a guy who worked for Jacques Cousteau for years say that underneath of the floor of the pens is not clean enough for whales. Okay, that area changes every single day, depending on tide, depending on whether we just had a hurricane, depending on how much feeding they did. One picture underneath of that floor of that pen does not show the story. If you do some Googling research, make a list of how many pens they say are clean underneath and how many have problems. Why don't you take your cut from there, okay? Along with that, like I said, I could go into many, many areas where I've seen and heard people say things that I thought were just ludicrous compared to the stuff that I've looked at. I implored council to look at the value of their natural assets. Again, I already went there. I don't mean how much a piece of property here is going to sell for. I mean, look at them in terms of their real value, in terms of what people from other places in the world who don't have these things think they're worth. They think they live in dreamland, some of them. What do you mean you can walk to the beach from your backyard? You know, I mean, honestly, I have no idea what we, in this time in the world, when we could look, turn on our television, turn on our computer, see devastation, see pollution, see everything, everywhere else in the world, why we don't value the things that we have and see that these things are becoming a minority. People will want them more and more. They're going to be in high demand. We can't afford to get rid of them, or we will never have anything, because that is what's left for us to bring us out of a subsistence living, which Nova Scotia has been in for many, many generations, and where we get subsistence jobs like aquaculture. Okay, that's all we've ever had here. That's why we are in the situation that we're in. People work jobs during the day. They made enough money so they could put some food on the table. But you know what? The money ran out. So what did they have to do? Oh, they had to go build the deck for Jack over here under the table to make a little bit of cash. People wonder how come we have such a high level of cash economy. I can tell you why. Because people are trying to survive. It's not like people here are rich, you know, and they don't need the money that they have to make under the table. So I talked about a lot of things as far as that went. I talked about the historic problems that agriculture has had. And I also said positively, over the past 30 years, things have, you know, changed with agriculture. They have made some improvements. I'm not here to villainize anybody. There's lots of agriculture things that are actually good for our community. Put some mussel farms in, I'd be happy to see those. Fin fish aquaculture is a whole different thing. It's not the same. These fish eat fish. Okay? They don't eat plants. They don't want plants. We're feeding them plants, but they don't want plants. Okay? And over time, if you feed something that is not a normal dietary thing to an animal, a cow, a fish, a person, you know what's going to happen? Genetics are going to break down. They're going to get sick. We have several viruses now. I predict we'll get more. Okay, because of the way that agriculture is being run. You know, I mean, these things, these are scientific things that even a person with no science knows. Okay? Don't feed things to your kid. That's not good for them. Because you know what? They're going to get sick. They're going to get diseases. right? I mean, that's what we're doing here, right? We're trying to make amends for bad practices. And we can say, oh, there's been so many things. They've come so far. Look, they do this way now, and they do that way. We thought it was okay 30 years ago when they were doing it. And 30 years from now, we're going to look back on ourselves and say, oh, my God, why did we let them do that? We didn't know. We're not gods. We don't know things. We don't know what we don't know, and neither do they. And until proven things have come about, my God, I can't believe that you're going to give it away. So, anyway, I hope that this has been a quick little revamp of some of the points that I had to say the last time in regards to why I am opposed to finfish aquaculture, I should say that, and why I think that everybody should take a step back, look at it again for what it actually is. We do want jobs here. I do have a background in business and economics. I like to make money, but I like to make money socially responsibly. And this is not a socially responsible practice. It's not something we can be proud of. Nobody wants to come here to get a job from an aquaculture company. And actually, I was on a international site and saw that Cook is advertising for workers to come here from our country. So people here must not want the jobs that bad. So, now I would like to discuss the memo.
If I may, Mary?
Yeah, my 5 minutes is over.
You're very close. I would ask you to quickly summarize.
Yeah, well, I have points written down in regards to the memo as to why it shouldn't be sent regarding every question, okay? But to start with, I will tell you that what you're asking for in many of these things is information that, number one, Cook has already told us about at the AmeriCenter. Center. Many of the questions, the tables with the information were already there. This isn't new stuff that we're looking for, okay? This is information that is already here. A lot of people that are involved in the aquaculture are very well educated and have done all this research, and you're not really making any difference with those points at all, for the most part. Some of the information that you're looking for, things for them to do, are also already part of the regulations and have to be done by them, log books and things such as that. I can go through them point by point if you want to. I see that most of my points are mute because in the write-up towards, before you get to the memo, you put in there that your position was exactly the same as the position of the previous mayor, Christopher Clark, in supporting the expansion at Liverpool Bay. Supporting the Liverpool Bay aquaculture site. That's what it says in there. So, given that, I take it that you've already made up your mind and that you'll be supporting that. As my time is up, and I'd like to discuss it further, somebody wants to give me their 5 minutes, but as my time is up, I would like that you look at this logically again. Okay, this memo's not going to do anything. All this memo is going to do is say, oh, we better give them the license because look at all the stuff that Cook did. This reads like something that was already written by the agriculture industry, not by something that was written because of comments from the public. Most of the people aren't even going to understand what information they get back from that charts and graphs and everything. Our point here is we don't want any of them. I don't want them in Liverpool Bay. I don't want them in Fort Milton Bay. I don't want them anywhere until they can actually prove, through independent scientific data, that they're not hurting the environment. All that stuff floating underneath that everybody's worried about, I read an article the other day saying, hey, we can clean up the bottom, but it's all the waste that floats into the wetlands that are actually killing all the environments in there. Nobody has any research on that. They say they need more research on it. So again, viewpoint, I'm sure, because it looks like you've already made your decision. Lastly, before I sit down, I also hear from some of my neighbors that some of their friends have been sending them letters and contacting them and saying that they were considering living in Queens County but have now changed their mind if the fish farm is coming. And I'd like to know, have there been any correspondence received such as that? And what happened to our letters? If they're pigeonholed into a little thing, does that mean that if somebody else got them, they were destroyed? Don't you think that maybe they should be passed on or at least passed back to people and told, you know, if you want this, it has to go through this little pigeonhole right here. Otherwise, not going to be counted. So, nobody wants to hear any more from me.
Thank you, Mayor. In response to one of your items, all letters that are received by the Region of Queens pertaining to the aquaculture issue that are respectful are circulated to all council, and they all are aware of those. We have not received any letters, to my understanding, that have indicated that people will not move to the Region of Queens. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak to you? Yes, I have one follow-up.
Is that okay?
That is, Lori.
Okay. Lori Wyatt, 1429 Flatiron Road, Mill Village. Earlier when I was mentioning the salmon alpha virus, the one that causes pancreas disease and is being compared to mad cow disease, well, as I said in this literature, that some of these infected fish have been found in restaurants, in grocery stores, for us to consume. And I have to wonder that over time, what sorts of implications that would have on our health, because if you've ever been a blood donor or know of anybody who has been or wants to be, one of the questions that they always ask is, have you ever been in Germany or in Europe during this time period? And that's because of the mad cow disease that they had running rampant at that time. And even though it was years and years and years ago, if you were exposed to that, the blood companies will still not accept your donation of blood. Why is that? I just think it's worth thinking about. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mark. Mary White, you have a follow-up?
Hi, I do have one more thing to say. Some of it is very alarming. There was recently two developments in Inpen inshore fishing where two farms were found with ISA in closed systems. They are trying to figure out how that's actually possible. But when I did the research on trying to find out how it was actually possible, I came across the privacy requests that were recent, but just from January, maybe from February, and it was 87 pages of redacted information from the Department of Agriculture. You're not going to get any information about what's happening to your food, you know. They're going to close all, they're going to shut all that information down. You're never going to know whether you're eating something infected or whatever. It doesn't really matter. You're not going to get to the information anymore. It's part of the process.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, I want to thank members of the gallery today for your comments. It's what we have this session for, to allow residents to bring forward their concerns, and we appreciate that. Moving on, we will go to 6.0, approval of minutes. We have 6.1, regular council minutes for January 22nd, 2019. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes that were circulated? Hearing none, a motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Councillor Muse, seconded by Deputy Mayor Kelly. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? Motion ends. Thank you. Moving on to 6.2, public hearing, January 22nd, 2019. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes of circulation? Hearing none, a motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Councillor Fisk. Seconded by Deputy Mayor Kelly. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. We have nothing today under 7.0, dangerous or unsightly premises. Nothing today under 8.0, economic development. Under 9.0, corporate services, we do have some items. We have item 9.1. Loan to Registered Fire Department, Fort Medway Fire Department. Who would like to take the lead on this one? Councillor Fisk.
I so recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve a draft loan agreement with Fort Medway Fire Department in the amount of up to $35,000 to allow for the replacement of two bay doors on its fire department truck bay garage, with a loan to be repaid over 7 years, and that this be funded from the Special Operating Reserve.
Seconded for that motion? Councillor Johnson. Any discussion on that motion? Deputy Mayor Kelly.
I wanted to understand the payment schedule. Does that mean that the loan that was taken out earlier this year for $35,000 for the roof, which was due a payment on June the 1st this year, now move to June the 1st, 2020?
CAO?
Incorrect.
Pardon?
Incorrect.
Okay.
So the request is that the payment start next year, but the previous agreement already required them to start the payments this year.
Yes.
It would be inappropriate for us to move everything to next year, so that's why the payment in the first year for 1920 is $5,000, which is the original agreement.
Right.
And the new agreement today will move that $5,000 not from this year, but to next year.
Okay. Now, just for me clear, that's all.
Which then extends it out an extra year beyond what they were looking for, but that's because the staggering of the two agreements.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify something else. I know we've talked about this a lot, but when we come back to it, it's hard to sort of keep it straight as to how these agreements work with the fire departments. But I thought some time ago when the agreement with the fire departments was reached was to avoid this kind of effect on our budget and our operating reserves and try to sort of streamline it so that there's not these ad hoc requests to council for funding for various things. And it was supposed to put the fire departments in a position where they were looking ahead as to what they needed and budgeting properly and making their requests on an annual basis so that council and the region finance staff were aware of what was coming up so that we could budget for it properly. And this doesn't seem to be happening in this case. Am I wrong, right?
Still,
you would be correct.
So whatever we did in the past, whatever the agreement was, it's not being adhered to, or we have work to do still on that to help this, because it's still having this effect on our budget and our operating reserves to request. I mean, nobody wants to deny these things, but again, we have to try to keep our budget sound, and having to deal with that just means there seems to be more of these coming forward all the time now under this new agreement.
CAO?
At the present time, there's no formal agreement related to these types of issues.
Okay.
But at our last emergency services meeting last week, I believe it was discussed with the fire chiefs at the time, that the time will soon come where we will no longer be able to loan money because of our cash flow.
Right.
And so once we get to a certain level, then when these requests come in the future, we potentially may have to deny them.
Right.
Because whenever we loan money, it takes money away from our accounts that we don't have for operating purposes.
But a way to overcome this is to sort of get our operating reserves for this type of, for the fire departments in a position where on a regular annual basis, if they budget properly and budget forward, then we can actually help them out better than may happen in the future if they don't do this, right?
I assume they're budgeting property themselves. I wouldn't go there. I think that's my position.
Not budgeting their property, but budgeting.
That's how they make budget.
Letting us know.
When they come forward with requests, we deal with them.
Right.
And so if they don't come forward with requests, then that's less, fewer loans that we have to provide, and that's less financial responsibility they have later on when they come back looking for additional funds to help pay for those loans. Because at the end of the day, these loans are essentially being repaid by us through the grant money we're providing them. So we're providing the money on the grant on one hand, and then we're giving them money for a loan, and they're just taking grant money, and in most instances, just repaying the loans from money we're already giving them.
Right.
And so although it's called a loan, in many cases it's a grant, over and above the additional grant that they receive now. And so last year, the last financial statement, we provided the five fire departments with $1,050,000, I think, in funding, which is substantial, but obviously it's not enough based on some needs, because we still get requests for loans for additional funds.
Right. So it's not really an efficient way to do things, but when I say, when I talk about budgeting, I mean forewarning, or council and the region staff being aware of what might be coming would allow us to better meet their needs, right?
Yeah.
Well, when council established the capital expenditure policy for fire apparatus, that was the intention, I assume, at the time, was for that purpose, to better plan out what trucks some of them don't, in this particular case, it's outside of that.
Right.
And the last request from Port Medway was outside of that. And the last request from Liverpool Fire Department was outside of that. So they continue to come forward with other financial requests that aren't under that one policy. And so we have to make a decision. We either agree or disagree. For the purpose of that initial capital investment policy, that capital policy reveal was specifically for that purpose. So we continue to monitor that to find ways to make sure that's sustainable. Right now it's not sustainable, and so we have to find some other avenues to help fix that in the future.
So just one more question then. Is it possible to broaden that policy to include these things? Like, why aren't they included now? What is the difference between what's included and what's not included?
Those things are direct grants, or grant direct funding to purchase apparatus. And that excludes, doesn't allow for funds for things like this. This is a loan, this is not a grant. So while we're providing an operating grant on one side, and then they may or may not be funding it through the grant we're giving them,
okay,
to pay back the loan, these are loans, so they're paying it back.
Yeah.
No different than we loaned Millville's Fire Department $100,000 last month or a month ago to buy another building. They're paying it back, which is a little different than
right.
Just
okay.
Giving them a loan.
I understand.
Grant.
Thank you.
Councilor McLeod.
This is directed toward the CAO. I understand that the loans that we give them are interest-free loans.
Correct.
So under the organization themselves, are they able to apply to other lending agencies for specific loans?
Absolutely. But
where they would be charged the interest rate.
Absolutely. That's why they want
ours. So that's why they
want
ours. So we're depleting the general special operating reserve. Of that, did we take the 100,000 from that as well?
Correct.
And so now your another 35,000 is added to deplete that operating reserve?
Correct.
In the current year?
Correct.
So are there any other upcoming opportunities for that special operating reserve to be utilized? Or have we depleted it to the point where there's not a lot left?
Well, we can't deplete it because that's how we cash flow the operation every year. So in April 1st coming up, we'll have a new budget year.
Mm-hmm.
We don't actually collect taxes until May and June, so we have to have cash in order to be able to pay our bills. Otherwise, we wouldn't into bank indebtedness.
Okay, yeah.
That's the, we went to overdraft. That's
okay.
Bank indebtedness is the accounting term. But we go into overdraft, we pay interest on overdraft.
Right.
And so we have to protect ourselves going in overdraft. But if we continue to loan, that's why I say if the time comes, we can no longer afford to do that. Because then if we go into bank overdraft, then we're essentially paying interest on money we're loaning to somebody else.
Yeah,
interest-free.
At interest-free, yeah.
Which is a problem.
To add a little further information to that, all of the five fire departments are aware that our ability to provide interest-free loans is becoming very restrictive. And they will likely need to go to banks to borrow should they have future projects of any amount. And they are aware, and they will respond accordingly. Follow-up, Councilor McLeod.
Yes. I just want an understanding. I know there was an agreement with the fire departments, and I can't remember. They did an assessment or evaluation of their capabilities, and under that agreement, or I guess it was an audit, that we had done years ago. And under that audit, was there a condition or a suggestion of how they can be supplied money from the municipality, like under the lending and the borrowing process? Was that included in that audit?
CAO?
My understanding, the audit was done in 2014. My understanding was the policy that was developed for that purchase of capital vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
That fund that was established was based on recommendation of that audit.
Okay. So they're following that audit, are they?
Well, there's lots of recommendations in there. There's a few things that have been implemented, but there's also a lot of things that have not been.
Okay.
So those are ongoing discussions with all the fire departments.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Fisk?
You answer my request. Thank you, Mayor.
You answered it. Thank you. Councilor Fancy?
Since this is written down and the way we handle these situations and such as, again, it's each person in each group is always. It's your problem, and you're trying to deal with it the best of way you know how. So they're doing it. Is it to make that more accountable? I guess it's written there that it is an interest-free loan. That it could be put down as 1 or 2% or something like that. Is that something that can be without just open up a whole something? Just because if not, then that takes away from other project we're even doing here, right? Full things for what to do.
The recommendations before you, if the councilor wants to make an amendment to it and put interest on it, then that's up to council to make that amendment.
That would probably be not a good one right now.
Any other councilor have a question or comment? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? That is unanimous. Thank you. Moving on to 9.2, policy 23, regular meeting of council recommendations. We would like to take the lead on this one. Councilor Muse?
I move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve policy 23, respecting regular meetings of the council.
Seconded by Councilor Johnson. Any discussion? Councilor McLeod?
I think in the past we've tried this for a full 1 year term of having meetings in the evenings and some at council and some in the various communities. Although unless there was an issue that was really of importance to those attending or the specific community that it involved, we did not get a lot of turnout. However, I feel that we should continue with the evening meetings, and I like the idea of them in the communities, and I think once word gets around and people understand that these are open to the public and it doesn't always have to be an issue that they deal, that they attend, that it can be, basically supporting council and in our efforts to get out there and be more open to the public and provide convenience for them to come to our meetings, and I feel this is it should be continued.
Another councilor? Councilor Fancy?
So are we putting this all in one big ball of saying, okay, we want the evening meetings plus we're going outside? Is this all one?
It's all in the motion.
It's all in the motion.
It's all in the policy.
So if we were to say right now, we want to say what we were going to do, if we were going to go with outside meetings along with this, because in the motion it doesn't say what we're going to do, right?
It states the four locations that the evening meetings will be held the first quarter of every year.
Yes.
And the policy is there and its clarity.
Yep.
It's been circulated. We've all had a chance to review it. It's very complete. Any other comments, Councilor Fancy? Any other councilor have a comment or a question? Ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. 9.3. I would ask Heather Cook if she would like to come forward. This pertains to volunteers of the year, and we will need to draw two names for this event so that we can complete the recommendations.